All right, so the No Killers just did a great live set here on WFMU, and we are here chatting with them now. David, would you like to introduce yourself and the rest of the band?
David First, guitar.
Barry Elkin, drums.
Steve Belenke, bass.
All right. And I'm going to use the fact that you did Zipper last as kind of the jumping off point, since you mentioned in an off mic comment that was 35 years ago or so that you first...
That was off mic?
It was off recording. Okay. It was on mic, but cut out. It's on the cutting room floor, because it was out of context.
Okay.
But, you know, I think the point being that you guys have been together off and on for quite a number of years, and I think it's an interesting story.
Okay. Yeah. Well, basically, our first incarnation was... the three of us, at least, was 1977 to 1981, and then we started playing again 2004.
Mm-hmm. And that was brought about by...
He wants the story, Dave.
I know. I'm going to pull it out of you bit by bit. It's like the story with a capital T and a capital S at this point. Yes. It's a good story, though.
Yeah. Well, basically, in a nutshell, a friend of ours from back in the day saw an article in Mojo magazine where Thurston Moore mentioned us as part of a set of songs that he played for his band when they were starting out.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out, did I use turns out twice? I forget. it turns out that one of the stores, when we put out our one single, which was The Zipper,
mm-hmm.
In 1980, we took it up to New York and we, you know, peppered a few stores with them. And one of them was 99 Records, where he and his crew hung out.
Sure, yeah, I mean, that was a legendary store, and why there's not a plaque in front of 99 McDougal Street, I don't know, considering all the people that came and went and the records they put out.
I still pay homage when I go by.
Sure, sure, you have to.
And just that's the luck of whatever, mm-hmm. you know, if we wouldn't have done that. Not that we had heard of, 99 Records when we put it out there, but afterwards we heard about it.
Right.
You know? Soon afterwards, I would say, mm-hmm. you know, because they started putting out some of their own records.
Right.
And he brought us up to New York, Ed Bauman mm-hmm. brought us up to New York, and we did a show or two up here at the time. But nothing major came of it, and we kind of still broke up.
Uh-huh.
Well, it was not exactly our big break, but it turned out to be in the end.
Indirectly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, just a delayed big break.
Directly, just took a little time.
Right, right. And you had been playing some Philadelphia shows as well, and it sounds like, from what I was reading up on, the Philly punk scene, such as it was, didn't really know how to respond or chose not to respond to the type of stuff you were doing.
What was basically happening at that time was punk music, and that's what all the clubs cater to, and mm-hmm. sort of didn't know what the hell to make of us.
Right.
But we ended up playing with a lot of punk bands.
Mm-hmm.
It was as close as you could get to, we weren't going to play, you know, the cover band clubs, for
right,
sure.
Right.
And I don't know what else there was at the time. You know, what else was there?
There was one or two
guys. Some straight ahead rock and roll clubs.
But right.
Even that
again,
was,
that's...
you know. Weirdness was sort of okay. Just our kind of weirdness was a little
right,
a little too weird.
Yeah, there definitely was still some genre enforcement going on. As much as kind of any scene likes to think it's outside of the norm, there's still, you know, certain boundaries that they seem to adhere to. You did a show with the Misfits, is that correct? One of your opening shows way back in the day.
I barely remember
that.
that was. And, you know, actually, they were some of the nicest guys we ever played with.
Uh-huh.
I remember that specifically. Yeah. whatever their stage persona was or
right.
whatever, they were I mean, there were some other bands that will go unmentioned that were not nearly as friendly.
So what were all of you listening to in the early and mid 70s that sort of poured into The Zipper and the other stuff you were doing when you first started out?
I think what we listened to that sort of helped form what we ended up doing was started earlier than the 70s.
Right.
And we're probably giving away our age a little bit, but or a lot. But, you know, we listened to the Yardbirds and The Who.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a particular local band in Philly that we happened to really love
mm-hmm.
called Mandrake Memorial. And then, we were listening to avant-garde jazz pretty young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We were in our teens, and we came up to... New York to catch Ornette and Cecil Taylor and all those guys. We were still in our teens when we were listening to that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it got to the point where, like, you know, we couldn't find stuff. You know, we could, but the farther out it was, the better.
Right,
you
know, right, right.
We graduated to Albert Eiler and, you know, Sun Ra lived in my neighborhood.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
All the time.
Oh, funny. That's awesome.
Music, I like musical ideas.
Mm-hmm. That was helpful.
Yeah, he really turned around after our meetings.
I guess the only thing I would add to that is the thing that I think also influenced me and brought me from even, I agree with Barry, I was listening to a lot of free jazz too, but I then got into a lot of the minimalism music that was happening in the late 60s and early 70s. And that sort of gave me the idea of, or that, you know, trying to form songs, that and you know, the punk movement that mm-hmm. came along.
Right.
I have to admit, I mean, whether we sounded like it or not, when we started hearing that stuff in 74, 75, whatever, whenever it started, came available, maybe mm-hmm. a little bit later even, because we were still in Philadelphia.
Right, pre-internet days.
Yes. So, you know, it all sort of came together in that sense, you know, the idea of the going nuts, but also putting it in some kind of context.
Right.
I think we wanted to resolve it all, you know.
Right.
You know, all those possibilities. Because when we first started out, we were just out-and-out free-form jamming.
Mm-hmm.
It came a little bit later when we got the idea to start, you know, making these song structures.
Right, right. And it really works because it does, I mean, my background is much more on the rock and punk side of things, and, you know, your music appeals to me coming from that perspective as opposed to coming from the more free jazz experimental perspective. So I think you really kind of bring both into the fold, and it can, you know, and it can appeal to people who have both sensibilities.
Well, we are, I mean, we are rock and roll kids ultimately. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what we grew up playing. We're not jazz musicians.
That's
obvious. Yeah, so I feel stupid even having to say that.
It's like the standard disclaimer. So you found out about the Mojo article, and you knew Thurston already from the other work you'd been doing in the time since No Killers had broken up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those guys used to hang out at different, you know, they had all their side projects and mm-hmm. solo things. So there were a few times when I shared bills
right.
with Lee and New Thurston from, all three of us were on a Phil Niblock CD. So there were these tenuous connections.
Mm-hmm.
So I at least had his email address.
Right. Like, hey, that's me.
Exactly. That's exactly what I wrote to him, because, you know, one of the things he said in the article was like, we have to find out who these guys are.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, well, it was like he was really, you know, a mystery that had been going on for a long time.
Right.
You know, so.
So then he asked for some more music other than the single that he had. And
mm-hmm.
we went on a scavenger hunt in Dave's parents' house and found a bunch of old reel-to-reel stuff. And Dave worked like crazy trying to edit it down, and so he put it out on his label.
Yeah,
which was, you know, really good for us.
And, yeah,
and he was, you know, really generous guy, and really has a commitment to you know, getting music out there.
Yeah,
that needs to be. So it was great.
Yeah, and so how did that then evolve into you getting back together and playing and continuing to play? Because it's been like 7 or so years now since all that happened.
I'll take that one.
All right. You get closer to the mic in that case.
I want to hear what you have to say first.
Well, he I think was having a label party, a record release party or show at Tonic, right? Wasn't that it? And he asked us if we had thought about getting back together to play for that show.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not right.
I don't know. I think we were already playing by then.
Oh, were we?
Yeah, you see, I should have asked. I knew I wanted to hear his answer first. We already were playing that summer. But anyway,
oh.
Yeah. I mean,
should I ask the question again?
Yeah, go ahead.
So how did
only
you get started?
Only if you're going to give both answers.
Yeah, of course. I'm not actually editing anything. I'm just asking the question again.
Let the audience decide.
Right. I'll put your answer on the right track and his answer on the left track, and we'll see how they true up. So how did you come to start playing again after Thurston put the record out?
I think what happened was, you know, we were going to put the record out, and that was already decided. And like a lot of these, you know, reclamation projects, a lot of bands get to get, you know, there becomes this, you know, interest in seeing the band play. And so I think we kind of decided to, before we committed to anything, to seeing what it would be like, I, you know, it just became, we didn't really think we were going to do that at all. I never thought I was going to be playing again with these guys. Mm-hmm. I never thought any of this was going to happen.
Right.
But the last part would, no, it was all equally bizarre that it was happening. But the idea that we were going to, so we just somehow decided we were going to see what it was like. And if it turned out we couldn't do the songs the way we wanted to, we would figure out something else and say we didn't want to do the old songs. But we started out, and it was kind of rough at first, but I think it was that spring of 2004, actually, when we first started getting together again. And I think we did our first show over that summer. The Tonic show that Barry was just talking about happened in October.
Mm. I think one of the things that made it seem like an impossible thing to really try and do was the fact that Blinky and I pretty much just stopped playing for 15 or 20 years.
That's amazing. Totally.
But and we both started playing again.
Yeah.
and how? Yeah.
No, that's the funny thing is they had started for some reason independently, because we weren't all even in touch all that often, had started playing together not together but separately mm-hmm. in a couple of projects. And yeah, it's true, I had been playing but not these songs.
Right.
And it was hard in 1979 to be doing this stuff.
Right.
So the idea of doing it again, I mean, it, I don't know where it came from, but I guess I can honestly say we're doing it, I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you put out a whole new full-length album of newly composed material, not just going back to the stuff you were working on back, you know, when you were first going
at it. Yeah,
actually,
most of that stuff is new.
Yeah.
Some of it's going to be on the next record.
Mm-hmm. What's the time frame for that? Spring of 2012?
We're going to start recording this fall, actually.
Okay.
And hopefully the time frame will be shorter than before.
Took to do this one.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, We're Here to Help Out. Was it early this year or last year that it came out on Prophase?
It'll be about a year. It'll be a year in November.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was wow. So that probably was about 3 or 4 years in the making, it seems like, because I know you had kind of went through and laid some tracks down and then weren't really happy with how they came out.
Yeah.
And went back to the drawing board, kind of.
We've learned a few things. The lessons never stop, but hopefully, we've learned some things that we'll be able to add to the information necessary to compress the time it takes to do the next one.
Good. All right. And you're continuing to do other projects in addition to the Note Killers?
Yeah. I have a couple of solo things I do, a band with Kid Millions, mm-hmm. as I think I mentioned to you, called Matter Waves.
Yeah, and you guys have a show coming up at the Stone in a few weeks.
Yeah, October 22nd.
Cool. Yeah, you seem to have a knack for selecting awesome drummers, because Kid and Barry both are pretty killer.
Yeah.
So that should be a lot of fun to see. Cool.
Yes, definitely.
Well, we'll look forward to the new release in spring 2012, fingers crossed. And,
okay. Yeah,
it's on tape.
It's somebody said spring, so we'll hold you to that.
Yeah. Okay.
And thanks very much for coming down to FMU.
Thanks for having us.
Sure.
Thank you.